the best coaches in the game. We really ain't playing. We regroup up in the Slack chat where the coaches debrief. We be piecing these puzzles, occupy the chunk of the pie. Ain't no lie when we hit the block, helmets casket is out. You be seeing helmet after helmet, helmet after helmet. First place, second place, fifth place, eighth place, 12th place, 15, 16, 20. So many helmets, you got blurred vision, we got...
Here we are back once again, another DFS Army Bowl Call podcast. I am Alan Sislowski here with, you've become quite the fan favorite over DFS Army. I'm here with Kevin O'Brien, the fantasy football engineer. What's up, Kevin?
What's up, man? How you been, dude? Nice to talk to you again.
Yeah, it's been a year since you've been on, pretty much. It was last, I believe, August or July, and it's still one of our most popular podcasts we've had. People really like the way, well, I mean, you know what? If they're fans of this show, that means they're fans of And I always told you I enjoy listening to your podcast because of how you think about the game of Dynasty. And you haven't been podcasting for the last year, but I know you from Twitter and from this, and I am sure you have not fallen behind on rookie research.
I caught up pretty quick, man.
Yeah. So what do you think was, let's just do a quick review first. What do you think was the biggest miss or mistake the market made in 2020 when we looked at the rookies?
I guess in 2020 rookies, it was basically under appreciating what a rookie class could do to us. You know, how good could it be, right? And sometimes you get to a rookie class like 2019 or something where it's less than, let's say, sexy. And now 2020 comes around and you just want to like devalue those picks, not thinking that a rookie class is going to be different, right? So I think one of the biggest mistakes people make year over year with Dynasty rookie picks is they think like, cause they get screwed one year and then they go into the next following year, not really thinking about what crop of players are coming into the league in that given year. They kind of hold it against that crop. And I think one thing I've learned is there are times to buy rookie picks and there are times to sell them. So that's the tricky part, is knowing in a year in advance when to dump those picks and when not to.
And look who just walked through the door late as always, our the DFS Army founder, the Geek. What's up, Geek?
Hey guys, what's going on? Sorry, little internet issues here that we finally got cleared up.
What I'm talking, we already started this conversation about Dynasty, and I am glad to inform you, Kevin O'Brien, that our friend here, the Geek, was always a fan of Dynasty, but he's become one of us, like one of the, when's my next draft? Hurry up, I need another hit. If only I got one more draft, I could do it better. He's become that guy now. So
if I could just do it one more time.
That's right,
I know I could get it right.
Yeah,
I'll tell you, I got caught up in the quarantine drafts last year, man. Started all these dynasty startups. I never do best ball, and last year I did 20 best balls, and I was just addicted to drafting.
Yeah, why do you think it is? Why do you think that we love drafting so much? I mean, we all love it. I just don't even know why. When somebody asked me.
It's instant success, man. It's the microwave result, right? Like, so you draft a team, that's your player. Instantly, you get that player. And that's it's similar to DFS, right? You guys play, you set a lineup that week, that day, you get instant results and gratification. I mean, especially DFS Army, you guys get all the gratification.
There we go. I love it. One of the things that I like, so we talked about two things just now, best ball and dynasty. And they both, for me, and there's a crossover for me with DFS, and here's how it goes. I love drafting. Like, I love fantasy football. It's my first love. But, you know, in season, when you're doing DFS and you have serious amounts of capital on the line every single week, it's really, really hard to put a lot of attention, especially between like 12 and 1 on Sunday afternoon when some of those questionables are coming out. It's really hard to put a lot of focus on your season-long teams. The other thing, it's very much a distraction from kind of, strategizing for trades. So I love the best ball format because I get to have the fun of the draft without having to mess with it in season. Oh, I never have to think about it. And I could check it during the week and enjoy my, you know, and have my glow. With Dynasty, the nice thing about Dynasty, especially really deep leagues, is it's kind of similar. You don't have to really mess with waivers every week. There's not a ton to do in intra-week other than set your lineup. Even that does get actually a little bit harrowing because if you have seven leagues and you forget which one you have Odell Beckham in and he's injured or questionable and you're like, I got to scroll through all of these and make sure I remove him. So mistakes can happen. But I'm finding I like the format more than regular season long, because in regular season long, you really have to be on those waivers. You know, a piece of news comes out and you need to be hammering, you know, oh, Mike Davis, backup running back. He's the starter now. Got to get him in my lineups and that kind of thing. So I really do like these formats because it feeds the passion of fantasy football without necessarily having to do a ton in season. It very much appeals to me and my DFS orientation.
So Kevin, here's the question for you, and we'll call you Geek on the bottom there, and we'll call, because we're both here, Kevin. So here's my question for you, Kevin. So you were talking about dynasty philosophy. It's the first question you always ask every one of your guests. It's been a while since you've been here. So what is your overall dynasty philosophy? I'm going to throw the question on you because I think it's an amazing opening question to set the table here.
Sure. So I think for a while when I was doing my heavy podcasting and stuff, I used to tell people win now, later, and always. So my philosophy is sort of try to balance those, and I want it all. Why do I want to punt a year, or why do I want to go for it all and try to leverage myself that the following year that I'm going to be SOL with my roster. So in Dynasty, because it is the long game, even in Best Ball Dynasty, as the Geek was just talking about, in those formats, I like to play the long game. So I have like a part of my roster that's going to be aging vets and give me immediate production, like Davante Adams, not scared of him to have him on my Dynasty roster. But I'm definitely going to want to counterbalance him with someone like Justin Jefferson and have those two guys on the team together rather than be like Justin Jefferson and another young guy that maybe he has like an Amari Cooper, like is good, but not maybe so great. And I don't want an Adams and a Julio where they both sort of will fall off the age cliff at the same time. So I try to really play the long game in terms of having my cake and eat it too. I mean, people say you can't have it, but I mean, I've done it enough.
One thing I've criticized Alan about, and I'm going to throw this at you, Kevin, is, you know, because we're in enough dynasty leagues together. When you're in a few dynasty leagues with the same person, you get to know their approach. And Alan is very much, I'm going to say, diametrically opposed, or just unable to really embrace a rebuild ever. Alan, he is not a rebuild guy.
Well, I don't have the stomach for the productive struggle.
Yes, the stomach isn't there, and I've said, listen,
and you've said that yourself, right? Right, Kevin. You
yes.
I think I've actually taken those words from your mouth. I've heard you say it on a podcast.
I'm personally very different. So like my philosophy in Dynasty is if I'm not built to win, I want to lose. I don't want it. I look at my team at the beginning of every season, and if I don't see a winner, if I don't see a champion, every once in a while you kind of have a team that you look at and you go, this looks like it could squeak into the playoffs and maybe I could even make a little run, but it's going to take a lot of luck for me to truly have a chance.
Okay, so I'll throw this back on to you as a DFS guru type guy. One of the things that I used to learn a ton from Rich Rebar, Lord Reeves, was that you can win weekly by just grinding. You can pick up the waiver wire. You can get a lot of people in the dynasty world don't know this reference, but you guys probably will. Off the waivers, I can find my 3K wide receiver.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right? Yeah. Oh,
you know what that means, right? Oh, you course. Can find them, right? Yeah. So if your team is like mediocre and people want to punt, they just give up. I don't have the stomach for that usually. I actually go the other way. I go find my 3K wide receiver and win that week because a lot of these dynasty leagues are head to head. So if you can grind and you can actually, that's why I'll listen to guys like you. I'll listen to any of the DFS guys, and people say that's crazy. How can you leverage that for Dynasty? And I'm like, these guys teach me how to win weekly because they're starting a random Russell Gage.
Odeus Zaccheaus.
Exactly. Whoever. Like, I don't even know who the hell that is, but I'll play him for a week, you know, whatever, you know, so I always want to grind and I always want to push forward. And I've won multiple dynasty championships in a given year with a mediocre 500 roster. You just get hot in the right time, and I've done it for sure.
That's it. It's the grind weekly, then get hot in the playoffs. But now there's something else. In research for this podcast, I went back and listened to some of your old podcasts because I like the blueprint of how you think. And this is something that nobody, because right now, I don't know if you've been in a super flex startup this year. It is more quarterback crazy at the top than it's ever been. I mean, people have finally caught on to the point where they're going all in on QBs that it's not economical to go QB anymore. You always talked about, even in a super flex league, scrolling through, play, not the waiver wire because there's no waiver wire QBs left, but kind of getting drafting those rookie picks, those Drew Lock types. Can you talk a little bit about how you're not so worried about your second QB, even in a super flex league?
Yeah, so, and I'll even, full disclosure, I've gone back and forth with that because really what I've done in the past when I've said that is that I want my QB1 to be a rock solid QB, and then my QB2 I was okay streaming because I was better than the average player in finding the QB2 that week. And years ago when J.J. Zacharyson and Denny Carter, they used to have these really good streaming shows, the weekly podcast shows where they would stream. One year they did this thing where they streamed a quarterback. They basically, like, 1 week would start the bottom of the barrel QB, but they knew the matchups. They knew that weekly play, right? That a DFS analogy of that 4K quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. You'd get that $4,500 quarterback on DK that, you know, would have a good week and a good matchup, right? And I would stream that through my QB2. People caught on to that quite a bit, and it got harder as more Superflex leagues opened up. So when I first started was doing that, it was easier to do it. But also I'll say that it takes a long time. I mean, to the Greek's point, to grind a $30 dynasty league where you're streaming a QB2 and an RB2 and a 3K wide receiver on a mediocre team, you know, I mean, a guy standing here with four kids who often likes to take hiatuses from Twitter and the podcasting, you know, my time gets away from me, right? So I think there's a balance there. It depends on how much you want to put into these dynasty leagues, how much you enjoy building a roster, how much do you enjoy streaming. And I think that goes into a lot of it because, you know, when I first started Dynasty, I was a heavy redraft player. I had played maybe 15 years of redraft fantasy football. So when I went into Dynasty, I had that mindset that I could win the waiver game. I could draft older players and I could find the younger guys off waivers before anyone else. And I would grind harder than the rest of my league mates. But I guess as I'm getting older and, you know, now with so many kids and stuff, I'm less interested in that grind. So I have found myself, like, last year stacking up like Kyler and Dak when it was affordable last year.
Right.
I haven't done a startup this year, but
the problem is also that you want the rosters big enough so you don't have to grind the waiver wire. I think that's the happy medium because the Geek and I have done these best ball dynasties and we don't engage them. Like, they're not as interesting to me because I you know, I set it. I don't even go look at it. The next year I'm like, oh, okay. Cause they have no waiver wire. So the best ball is a little too non-engaging. It doesn't give me the experience I'm looking for. I think the FFPC, they have the smaller rosters. So you really do need to grind. So I think what we have found that we like, and Geek, you can kind of back me or, you know, say your opinion on this, but I think just large 30, 35 man rosters where there's no waiver wire except for a D'Ernest Johnson that pops up here once and there for a week.
One thing I'll throw in with those formats. So we really, there's two things. And actually, Kevin, it's funny when you talk about like 15 years ago, I had a resistance to super flex leagues. I'm going to tell you why, because I've also been, a 20 year fantasy football player, loved it since I discovered it in like 2003, I think it was. Yahoo, baby, internet, yay. So one of the quickest things I figured out was I could get an edge on my leagues just by understanding the scarcity of position at quarterback. And, you know, everybody in your league just was taking Brett Favre in the first round or Peyton Manning in the first round. So it was such an edge that I had on my league mates because I was willing to take the 10th quarterback every time. That's how I played fantasy football. So when the Superflex format came out, I said, hey, wait a minute, you're taking away my superpower here. My superpower is I'm in leagues with, like, you know, nine knuckleheads who still haven't figured out that you don't draft Michael Vick in the first round with the first pick. Like, so it was an edge, and I didn't want to give it up. But, the pendulum swung. Number one, people figure that out. And number two, now it's interesting. So initially in Superflex leagues, what I found was people didn't prioritize quarterback correctly because of the same thought process that had them waiting on quarterback in the single QB leagues, which was, I can get one later. And it's to your point of the streaming. I'm not in a single super flex league where you can possibly pick up a quarterback from waiver. Like, they're all gone. Even the backups, even Taylor Heineke last season, you know, it's like, hey, he's starting. Can I grab him? And you're like, nope, somebody got that guy too. I can't believe it. So, you know, it's really, really tricky you have to adjust your head completely. And it actually does take a couple leagues to understand, oh, this is how this plays. And it took me playing it a season on Superflex to understand how this plays. I want to change point a second. I do have a question for you, Kevin, that I've been thinking a lot on. And last time you were on our podcast last year, you were talking about an emphasis early on wide receiver over running back, the longevity of the position, getting secure at wide receiver. You get these guys who are more 6 or 7 year windows compared to the 2 or 3 year windows that we get from running back. And I started, and to that point, my question really reflects the wide receiver position, but it's on a different note. So I know you do a lot of research on different player profiles coming out of the draft and success ratios. So we've kind of got these two groups of wide receivers, really three this year, but two that we see these giant monster guys, basically the 6'4" dominated in college, but had physical advantages in college that really stood out versus, you know, your group, the 5 to 10 to 6 feet, the quicker group. Right. So in the last few years, we've seen a lot of these gigantic wide receivers bust, where they look like they would be good. They're first round picks, the Mike Williams types, if you want to call them a bust or not, that's fine. But we've seen a lot of these guys really not work out. So my question is there any research to show these wide receivers coming out of college that look like monsters, 6'4" guys, you know the names, versus the 6-footer, who is more likely to bust in the NFL? Or is there any thoughts on that at all?
Yeah, absolutely. So I haven't gone as far. So one, the first thing that came to mind, and I haven't done the research on, but I have heard this proposed, which is the cornerbacks are getting bigger. So, you know, us that play fantasy football, for like, there was probably a 10-year span, you say 2003 to like 2013, where your strategy really didn't change much. And to be honest, the NFL didn't really change much. They weren't as pass happy. You can get your Matt Fortes the same as you got all these other Jamal Charles, and you just live with them. MJDs, we were living on these same guys for so long, right? But then NFL's changed. You know, fullback went away. You know, receiving tight ends became more of a thing, more common than it was. And then you got 3 wide receiver sets. And then, so you sort of, you guys get that concept of like, you know, you can build this defense shield, and then they're just going to build a better rocket, and then you got to build a better shield, and then they build a better rocket, right? And this is the sort of thing. The NFL does that with offenses and defenses. So they got these big receivers to dominate these small cornerbacks. And what did defenses do? They started drafting bigger cornerbacks and to target those bigger receivers. Then they went back and said, whoa, here's this guy Antonio Brown that can run a route that shakes this big cornerback's shoes off, right? And he just continually can beat him, even though he's not the biggest guy, and quite frankly, maybe not even the fastest guy. So there's a balance there that needs to be struck between route running, spatial awareness. I mean, this, you can get really deep into like how you evaluate film, but you can also look at the metrics and is that freak athlete have the combination of being able to fit in the offense, have the size and athletic profile that he needs to dominate, but can he also get in the open, and can he do what he needs to do to get the separation, which is something, you know, Matt Harmon's work on reception perception has been great, because he's looked at, how do I quantify that separation? How do I quantify that this receiver is constantly beating his coverage or his defense that he's seeing, zone or man? So I think a lot of that goes into that, but at the same time, I mean, it's just that constant adjustment. Like I said, you know, you're not really seeing the Calvin Johnsons come up either, right? It's not like you're seeing it, right?
Bringing it back. Yeah, some of those names, like the Cortland Sutton of the world. Again, I brought Mike Williams. Corey Davis was one of these guys. You know, really high picks that seem to bust. And what I've been trying to figure out, and I think you're on the right track with the cornerback play, I'm trying to figure out, these guys are so dominant in college, then they come into the NFL and not all of them work out. Some of them do.
Well, and Corey Davis is like in his situation, like the people would criticize the competition, but also as the NFL, the rules get, you can't hand check as much or hold and grapple. The smaller guys, the quicker guys definitely have a better advantage. Okay. I think that has something to do with it too. I just want to get into some actual rookie draft stuff, if you don't mind, because this is what I find is fascinating is that, it doesn't matter if you're in one quarterback leagues or super flex leagues. I mean, there's two different ways to think about this. At the top of the draft, running backs always get pushed up, and sometimes to a fault. Last year, you had someone like Keyshawn Vaughn going at like pick 111 in rookie drafts ahead of first round receivers like Brandon Ayuk and T. Higgins, who basically was a first round receiver, first pick of the second round. Is there anybody this year that is at buyer beware in the third round that you think might be this year's Keyshawn Vaughn, like when you talk about Trey Sermon, Michael Carter, who went in the fourth round, or are these guys more like Alvin Kamara, who he went in the third round, but no problem? That's my concern about those late running backs.
Yeah, let's say I'm going to go with the chalk take here. I'm going to try to use as much DFS arsenal lingo that I could use out of myself, but I think I'll go with the chalk take on this, and that you're basically looking at the top three running backs, and then everyone else after that is more of a zero RB. Think of them as like a 4K, 5K type RB, right? You'll never see like Trey Sermon. You'll probably never see above 6K on DK. You know what I mean? That kind of guy, right? He's always going to be he has a really good matchup. The starter role all of a sudden got hurt and he's priced appropriately. I think you're probably looking at Michael Carter, Trey Sermon, those kind of guys. Even people are starting to get excited about the Patriots running back.
Lamont,
I can't pronounce his name, but yeah.
Listen, there's a lot of similarities between Stevenson and what Garrett Blunt did on that team. So, I mean,
right.
You're chasing LeGarrette Blount all of a sudden?
Right, but I'm saying it's, you know, in rookie drafts, he goes in the fourth round. I mean, or like the end of the third round.
This is the other thing to note is that the later you see rookie drafts, you're going to see his ADP pull up. Yeah. Just like Trey Sermon. When Trey Sermon, before people got a handle on the analysis of post-draft and getting excited about that landing spot, Trey Sermon was back in second round or third round. You're going to start seeing him in the early second, late first, because the word's going to get out on him and people are going to start probably pushing down other players that they had. I mean, there were a lot of people that had like Seth William types that were higher pre-draft. Those guys are all going to get pushed down at ADP. Sometimes that's slower the first week or two after the draft.
I've been dying. Let me ask him this, because I've been dying to ask this. I took a part in a mock draft with some analysts are in the industry, and it was before the draft, and it was a single quarterback draft, and I had pick 7, and I didn't like what was on the board, so I took Trevor Lawrence at the 1.7. Pretty publicly, I got crushed by the Podfather. I mean, you know, really, really beat up pretty bad, and I didn't think it was that bad of a pick. He has subsequently apologized, saying that, you know what, it ran 1.7, 1.8. But when you're talking about an elite level prospect, like it was Kyler Murray the year before, he was going like 1.8, 1.9. Is it that egregious in a one quarterback league to take a prospect like Trevor Lawrence, or is that just, again, bad process?
I tend to go on the side of bad process, but I won't blast you like a Matt Kelly. Yeah. I don't like
it. It's okay if you do, by the way. I could take it.
So the one thing that I've done with quarterbacks, and especially obviously you're referring to one QB leagues, but
yes,
those I target like Lamar, Kyler, because I'm chasing this rushing upside. With the pocket QBs in one QB, their edges get really, really smaller because you're not getting the 6-point touchdowns. A lot of the passing TDs are 4, and you can stream above replacement more often than not. I mean, the guys like Stafford just get normalized a little bit too much, I think, in one QB. So if I'm going to do it, I probably chase like a Lance in the early second or, you know, mid second.
But talk about this all the time, that you want to go through the microphone and scream at people, because if I only have pick 1.7, I don't have pick 2.2. I have 2.7.
That's a problem with these drafts. That's a problem when you're in a mock draft to begin with. I've I've participated in Ryan McDowell's mock drafts, and I've always hit him up like year after year. And it's like, can I trade the pick? Like,
you remember, like, dude,
can you enable trades in these rookie mocks? Because this is right. Not.
You talk about it all the time.
My name to this player, and it's like, I don't want to be in this spot in the draft.
Right. Go ahead, Geek. You had a question.
No. And by the way, that is absolutely. It's an interesting. I think the Johnny Lawrence, the Trevor Lawrence pick 7 is an interesting situation with this year's draft in general. So I do want to come back to it. We have the size issue, right? You've got a bunch of some undersized wide receivers in that top group. Moore, you know, what is he? 5'7". You've got, of course, Chase and Smith. So you have this whole group with some oddly unusually sized wide receivers that are the hot group, and you've got the three running backs, some of which have some issues as well up at the top. So the general thought here is, again, taking away the quarterback side of things and taking out the super flex, let's just talk about top prospects this season, ranking your sort of favorite rookie picks, kind of 1 through 7. I think that's the elite group. So Kevin, if you're picking number one on the board
in a super flex, you asking him, or in a
no super flex? Let's get that out of the way. We know who the super flex number one is. Let's take the super flex out of the equation. We all pretty much know what the QB rankings are. Number one overall pick. Which way are you going this year? Are you going with the running back? Or are you going with the wide receiver?
The wide receiver, always. I mean, I'm always chasing Chase, if you will. I will always go wide receiver over running back, and that's sort of my own mantra, like Alan mentioned before. It's just my own personal process that I really trust my evaluation of these receivers year over year, and I just feel like my own personal hit rate, if you will, is better when I go wide receiver. Like last year, I was taking Lamb over CEH, and people thought I was crazy. Right. And then people can argue, well, we should have been taking Taylor over CEH, but my argument was I was taking Lamb over CEH, not whether I was taking Taylor or not over CEH. But I just like those receivers more. I mean, especially with someone like Harris, where I don't think he's a clear Jonathan Taylor, honestly. I think Harris would be lower than Taylor, in my opinion, if we were rewinding this. If they were in the same draft class, I think I would go Taylor over Harris, prospect profile wise, just because I don't like Harris's age. I mean, he's 2 years older than Javonte Williams. That's significant for me in Dynasty.
I just have a question for you there, because I hear a lot about that. Like, you know, Najee Harris he's 23 going on 24. But really, when you're buying an early running back, you're not buying, you're buying the first contract, right? I mean, if you're buying a first round running back, you're saying, okay, it doesn't matter if he's 23 to 27 or if he's 24 to 28. You're buying that first contract. But that said, when you're spending the 1-1, you're hoping to get Zeke, right? A second contract, or a Todd Gurley, a second contract. Is that more where it is? Is that where your philosophy with taking the young wide receiver?
Certainly. But I think also when you say first contract, if that's 4 or 5 years, depending where they got drafted, I would take the first 5 years of a wide receiver than the first 5 years of running back anyway. And if you're just playing Dynasty to circle through running backs, you probably should trade that first pick for a more stable veteran running back, like, for instance, in Akers or something like that. If you could get Akers, something plus the 1.01 plus to get Akers or Dobbins or something that's already been revealed but still young, I probably would go down that route myself anyway, where Akers is probably still like 6 years younger than Harris.
What about bust rates, though? Because the running back bust rate is just lower than it is for wide receivers across the board. So, you know, what about the factor? So essentially what you're saying, I mean, I want to throw out, like, what about the factor of the bust rate here? Where
he said he trusts his evaluations, though, and he was right last year. He's been right on a couple of these other. Obviously, you're going to get some wrong. But
so I think that bust, I can go on a whole nother podcast about bust rates and stuff, which I can get into a little bit. I wrote down some notes a little bit when you guys are talking about what we might discuss about that. So quickly, first, there's two different things. One is you yourself have to be you're in the pilot seat, if you will. You have to trust, do you identify running backs more than wide receivers, or are you about average, right? So me personally, I do tend to like wide receivers more, and maybe I just feel like I'm better at projecting them from college to pros than I am a running back. And that could be in part, that's because when you talk about bust rates, receivers, there's more of them. So it's kind of hard to look at the numbers on that a little bit. You can look at running backs, but their draft capital is usually lower than wide receivers. And so they're not really apples to apples. But if you're looking at wide receiver profiles, typically talent wins out at wide receiver and opportunity wins out at running back. So if you're better at identifying the opportunity that the running back has in front of them, let's give a clear case of Harris in Pittsburgh. You like his opportunity. A muddier one is, how well are you going to read the Denver Broncos running back situation with Gordon and Javonte Williams? I really like Javonte Williams, but I'm not really trusting myself that he's going to beat out Melvin Gordon for the next 1 to 2 years. I don't trust myself looking back at my history on that, you know, whether I was predicting Trey Mason or Devontae Freeman or, you know, where, and those I got one right and one wrong, right? And I got Freeman right, but I got wrong Trey Mason in the same year. But then if you look at wide receiver, I'm much more confident that I feel like Chase is going to beat out Higgins for the target share over a 3-year period.
The good news is he doesn't even have to. It's like there's not even a tight end there. And, you know, there's like
a lot of targets to go around. Yeah.
But it's a clear example, I think.
I would throw this at you that it gets pretty sketchy right after Chase in this draft. Like Chase is a pretty easy one. He looks like the ultimate blue chip guy. But I mean, you go down the list of the next few, Devonta Smith, size concerns on a team that's terrible at drafting wide receivers.
Do you like him? Kevin, no. You don't like Smith? Is it just the
size? No, I was out early on this class, to be honest with you. In like when I came back to Twitter on a regular basis in probably February or March, I looked at this class and I was out on it from then. I did not like the size profiles. I do not like their potential for their transition. I think this class is full of a really good role fitters in the NFL. Like I think Rondell Moore is going to fit a role in Arizona. I think these smaller wide receivers are just going to fit roles. I don't think that they're going to be target monsters. You know, I don't think there's chases. I don't think there's going to be Justin Jefferson's where he's like the top target getter, you know, right off the bat. I just don't see that. I don't even know that really they're going to be Ayuk's in this draft, to be honest with you.
Well, that begs the question then. I mean, you couldn't have more hype for a tight end than you do Kyle Pitts. Give us your whole Kyle Pitts take, because it actually happened today. Put your seatbelt on for this one. He went 1-1 in a Superflex tight end premium draft. And I understand tight end premium, but over Trevor Lawrence or your QB of choice at 1-1, it shocked me. And I'm never shocked in these drafts. So give me your Kyle Pitts take. And is he truly a unicorn?
Yeah, I do think that he's a unicorn, and I do think that he's better than, you know, a lot of people will cite the other first round tight ends that we've seen, like Hawkinson and Ebron, and going back a little bit, we've seen tight ends go in the first round in the NFL draft and also in dynasty rookie drafts. But I do think that he's special. I do think that he's different, with the caveat that I do think it's a little bit of a longer game. I don't think, like, for example, Harris is going to outscore Pitts probably in this season, but will over Pitts outscore Harris over the next
two seasons? Say, who's going to score more fantasy points?
Gronk in his second season, I think at age 22, 23, you could see that double digit touchdowns if Julio's not there. And I think you could see it happen. I don't think I would be necessarily against that. So I'm on board with Pitts, not necessarily maybe at 101, but I will, for the people that are making that pick, I will defend them a little bit, because I have seen people go like, these, you guys play FFPC at all? Any format?
Yes.
You run every now and then, you'll run into these teams that get like Kelsey and Kittle at the turn, and they just freaking crush, man. They hit their running back and receivers, and they just absolutely crush. They just kill you. And there's people out there that build teams that way that do very well with that style. For me, I couldn't probably stream wide receiver and running back at the same time well enough to do it. But in those situations, you know, you're playing a tight end in your flex in tight end premium. You got double-headed monster at tight end. I've seen like guys like Sigmund Bloom do this in drafts. He just crushes the tight end. And then all of a sudden he's picking up the late round running back, getting your those wide receivers that we talked about earlier, you know, mm-hmm. between the 3K, 5K range, those wide receivers, and he's crushing it with those receivers, and you're dominating a tight end. I can't do it. I've not been able to recreate it, so I'm not taking Pitts at 101, but I have seen people do it. And, you know, a lot of people on podcasts, you mentioned this thing before. That is my thing on my podcast. I've said a lot is that I started a podcast because I would listen to podcasts and want to rip through the microphone, right? Like, give me I don't know if you guys ever watched West Wing, but it was like, give me the next 10 words, right? Like people would say trade down. It's like, okay, yeah, for what, man? Like, I'm not trading down in my league. Everyone's doing this. You can't have 75% of the podcast with 75% of the market trading down.
Right.
Sure, it happens, but it's not tangible.
It's like when you get in, it's like when you get in these dynasty startups, what's the first thing that said? All right, pick 101 on the block.
It's on. Exactly. It's available.
Right. Exactly. It's available. And, you know, it's not the days of people trading up to take Andrew Luck 101, right? Like those days are gone. They're like, you might find them. So, you know, someone will listen to this podcast and find a random trade out there in the 3,000 dynasty leagues, of course. But like by and large, when you're giving advice to the thousands of people, you know, that's not really tangible for people, right? They can't trade down. And if they do like to build tight end premium, they're going to go Pitts 101.
Yeah, so. You know, I've pulled it off the double tight end smash at the turn in the past. The double benefit of it is, especially in seasons when there aren't that many good ones, it's not just that you're going to have the tight end position and you have the advantage. And all right, I'm going to put one in my flex, super flex premium. The double advantage is you're taking, no one else is getting those guys. It's like a hoarding of the elite.
Kevin said he understands it. He says that because I empathize.
Yeah,
he just can't pull it off for some reason because he's probably always reverting back to your basic philosophy. And I think that's why you start your podcast all the time. It's like, what's your dynasty philosophy? Because a lot of times when you ask that question, I think I know what I'm going to hear, but it's amazing. You'll have 10 guests on and I hear 9 different philosophies a lot of time. It's pretty interesting. Last year when you were, did you want to make a comment on that? Because I have another question for you. Were you about to comment, Kevin?
No.
Good. Okay. So last I heard you, and again, let's just give out your Twitter real quick. If anyone, we're here with the Fantasy Football Engineer. Now you have changed your Twitter. So give out your new Twitter. I'm going to put it on the screen while you're talking.
Yeah. It's my full name, Kevin O'Brien, FF. Keeping it simple. I was the FF engineer for a while.
Underscore.
Double underscore. You know, people hated that. And
I loved it. I
was fighting that off, and that wasn't a big deal. But, I just noticed in the last like year or two, there's a couple more fantasy engineers like using that name. So it kind of got old. I was the only one for a long time. You know, I mean, I feel like an old guy on Twitter now. I've been on Twitter for 10 years and talking dynasty for at least 10 years.
Come on TikTok with the rest of us, man.
No thanks.
So last, when you were on, by the way, do you have plans to start your podcast again?
I do. I don't know when, but I do.
All right. Well, I highly recommend it's Fantasy Football Engineering. Definitely download it. Listen, the old episodes hold up. I'm telling you, like, who the hell listens to an old podcast? I was in when I found out you were coming on. I went back and I was like, oh, I was like listening the whole episodes again. So yeah, they do are evergreen for Dynasty Philosophy. But last we left off, you were kind of I don't want to say anti tight end premium, but it wasn't moving the needle for you. And I think the market agreed with you because now the tight end premium leagues that I'm in are not 1.5 PPR. They're 2 point PPR. Explain how that might move the needle in a startup draft.
Yeah. So when you get up to the 2.0 premium for tight end, it does push it. It at least levels the playing field where you're getting the, usually you're dealing with maybe 3 or 4 good tight ends. And as soon as those are gone, you're just like, forget about it. I'll punt 10 in and do whatever I can. But once you get to 2.0 premium, you really start to level out and you can start getting interest in these back end tight ends. But
we play in a lot of two tight end leagues now too. I mean, that's almost like standard issue or we won't go in it anymore. And I know the geek hates it. I love
I'm
it.
Not a fan of the, I'm not a fan of starting two tight ends. There's so few of them.
I'm not a fan of a min to start, but I'm not necessarily opposed. Like I said before, if somebody's going that route and they're good at building quarterback, running back, receiver, by grinding on the back ends of drafts, by all means, I've seen it work. So I'm not against that necessarily. It's just not my method of operation.
See, so, I want to go back to what you said before, because I'm still reeling from the fact that outside of Ja'Marr Chase, this whole wide receiver crop is a pile of crap. So now I'm like, all right, let's say you have pick. I just want to make the joke about trade down. Like, if I've got pick 1.5, get out, trade down. Should I be trading it now? If I'm in a regular league, I mean, no super flex. You're sitting staring at Ja'Marr Chase or Jalen Waddle, who's going to have a career. I love Waddle, actually, but he's going to have a career with potentially Tua throwing.
So just poking at ADP, maybe I would say for your argument, pick 6 is where I think the cutoff might be. I would take Javonte Williams at 5.
Yeah, there we go.
I do like him at 5. And I think after that, it's where it drops off. So just to clarify, like, some combination of Chase, Harris, Etienne,
Pitts,
thank you, and then Javonte Williams. And I think at 6, you're looking at Waddle, Smith. Now Sermon's creeping up, Carter's creeping up, you know, Bateman, those guys. I think that's where you really get a significant drop off is after the, and I will give the benefit of the doubt that I do, I'm coming around to this RB premium, but I'm not going to go like Trey Sermon's worth a first round pick, like thirst. But I think Javonte Williams worth taking over Waddle or Devontae Smith.
So people tuned in tonight because we promised them some actionable dynasty tips. And last year when you were on this podcast, you used a term that stuck with me, and we use it all the time. We give you credit, so don't worry. But it's the stinky cheese running backs in a startup. And last year you correctly identified Todd Gurley, James Conner as these running backs that you have to get taken in the third round because you need a second running back. David Johnson.
Kenyon Drake.
We fell for it. We fell for it. Kenyon Drake.
That wasn't stinky
cheese. I was out on all those guys.
Yeah. So who is it this year? Who are the ones that it's buyer beware, pass on them in the third, fourth round, and just go other positions? Or who are the older running backs? I mean, does Derrick Henry fall into that, or is he just too good? Like, who are the stinky cheese guys, buyer beware this year?
So I haven't done much best ball yet for like a redraft seasonal thing, but I think probably Carson probably might fit into that. I think Carson's probably one that I would avoid for sure. I'm drawing a blank on some of the other ones. I think Cook, Henry, those guys still have another year, so I wouldn't necessarily be out on those guys.
Henry's 27. Wait, is Zeke Elliott stinky cheese? This is haunting me.
He's 25 years old. He's 25 years old.
So I that's a difficult one to say he's stinky cheese, but I won't be touching. So,
well, that's stinky cheese. What's then, by something? Definition.
You're putting me in a spot here, but like
we always,
I wouldn't draft him.
This is for bold calls. It's fine to make very bold. I hate him.
Well, it's calls. Because he just drafted him in a startup. That's why he's
sick over it already.
So you know, Evan Silva. One of the things that he does that I think is really low key that he does when he does his top 150 in his rankings that I've taken to is like, you know, I'm not comfortable with the word analyst, but whatever I am, if I ever publish rankings, whatever I am, one thing I learned from him as an analyst that does a really good process with the stuff is that he ranks players that when people read them, they won't get this player. So it's not that like I put him like off my rankings, but I would put Zeke so low that you probably the 11 other guys are going to take him before you will.
Right.
But like stinky cheese, I think of like in no circumstances you'll draft him. Like last year, I was like, no way I'm taking Gurley even if he falls to the 11th round. Like I was not taking him at all. Zeke is more of that category. Like I'll be the 12th guy that takes him.
Right.
And like if he drops to the fourth or fifth round or something, you know what I mean? Like, which is unlikely, but if it happens, I would take him.
You're going to make the geek commit Harry Carey here.
No, because the beautiful thing about there's still value. There's still enough value that I'll be able to move that asset if I want to. He's not in a dynasty format. The nice thing about somebody like Zeke is somebody will trade for him. They need.
I traded for him in our other league. I just traded 1.6 foolishly for him.
There you go.
I can make an effort at making you feel better for Zeke. A lot of people scoff at this, but I do think there's something to this in the dynasty space. Is that if you go, I don't know if you guys know the Footwork King on Twitter. He's this.
The videos I saw. Yeah. If that's what you're saying.
Yes.
This convinced me. I saw exactly
this. Dude's legit.
No, this dude is legit. I don't know what you're talking about. So explain.
Yeah. Okay. So there's this guy. He's on Twitter. I think it's footwork_king2. He lost his king1. I don't know. He lost his account. So he went into footwork_king2. But anyway, you can find him on Twitter. He is legit. His facility's in Texas. He's very legit. He works with a lot of athletes, professional athletes, NFL, and he works with kids like, you know, these high school kids that you hear about, like Friday Night Lights kids, like they're like 12-year-old, but they're like being groomed for Hall of Fame. And then he works with like Emmanuel Sanders, and he works with all these guys that he's just literally the footwork king. And people scoff at these videos because Zeke is looking great and people scoff at it. But Derrick Henry looked great and people were scoffing at it before he took off. Mm-hmm. And they were like, oh, you know, people in shorts and, you know, on AstroTurf, people getting, you know,
the underwear Olympics, the whole
thing. Exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, that scoffing, right? But I do think that on some level there is validity in this, because I'll say this, when Zeke had those stomach gut hanging out pictures getting leaked, we were moving him down in the rankings because of it. Right. Because everyone doesn't like that image of he just doesn't care about football. He's not working out. He's not in shape. But then we hate it when they are. This is something doesn't add up to me.
Best shape of his life.
Kevin, I saw these videos. OK. And my criticism of Zeke has been, and I've done this on the bowl calls, on the bowl call pod for years. I've said this guy got paid and he doesn't give a shit anymore. It happens. Every now and again,
I disagree with this, because think about this. Like, you've all played like just pick up basketball or something, right? And that's in front of nobody. And
you
try your ass off.
Because you don't understand. In order to be an athlete at the level of an NFL top five elite athlete, you have to work hard every single day and fight. You need to chip.
What's your next revelation? The sky is blue. I mean, obviously,
You have to care. You have to have a passion, right? And when you get $50 million, you're kind of like, yeah, I'm the fucking big badass. I want to go bang hot chicks. I want to go to Mexico. I want to do all that stuff. I want to have fun, get a little fat. Not everybody has the fire. So my issue with Zeke was, I think the fire went away. I saw those videos, Kevin, and I was like, you know something? This dude's working out again. He cares again. Now, it could have been all bullshit.
So it's easy to say that it's bullshit, but I will say this. It does matter in sports. Like, for example, David Wells, when I was a kid, was like, this dude is like 300 pounds and like throwing like 20 strikeout games. This is like fantastic, right? We all loved it, enjoyed it. It was like a riot, right? But in football, like if you lose a step, you're gone, man. Like you'll be replaced in a heartbeat. It really does matter. That edge means everything.
Think about the letdown game, right? A team clearly better, clearly a much better team comes in, and some Jets like franchise comes to town 0-14 and gets a win, right? And it's the letdown game. And you go, well, how is it possible? These guys are much more talented. Well, they let up even just a little bit, and that's the margin in the NFL. You just let up just even a little bit. You get even that, you go from 98% to 100%. That difference is enough to be the difference between a win or loss.
And I do think this is case by case. So, like, if you look at Zeke, did he have an injury that really hurt him? Like an ankle, a knee? Like, I don't see that. Like, MJD had ankles. Issues. Gurley's had his knee. So like you look, I think that's part of the consideration. You look at what he did actually do the last couple seasons. He had the Mardi Gras videos came out, was messing with these girls that he was going to get suspended for. You know, he did go the party life. And I think that what spooked him honestly is not necessarily that letdown, but he was going to get replaced by Pollard. Pollard was good, man.
And that one game,
Pollard, and he was good. And I think that scared him a bit. And what's the, you, do you think he's just not talented anymore? I don't think he's lost his talent. I don't think he's been hurt. If he's out of shape, it's possible that that's what's holding him back. And so now, like, I'm really working hard, Geek, to make you feel better. But
no, I mean, like,
but I'm not changing my stance. All that said, I'm not changing my stance that I'll be the 12th guy to take.
It's pretty rare that players turn around. It's, you know,
well, you see it also, stuff. you have the offensive line banged up. I don't want to make this a Zeke podcast, but you know, the offensive line banged up. He was doing well before Dak went down for the count.
I never want to hear about offensive line.
One second, hold on. The most important part is his new contract kicks in this year. He is locked in there for 2 years. He's being paid elite level money for 2 years, and the opportunity will be there. And as we know, running backs, the most important thing is the opportunity. Yeah. None of us are going to dispute that. Let's get back to the dynasty talk.
Let me throw one big dynasty question for this year's rookie crop. So beyond those top five guys, we've got some duds floating around. We've got some role players.
Who are the top five guys? The three running backs, Chase and who? And Pitts?
Yeah, Chase and Pitts, the three running backs. We got some duds. Who, Kevin, have you identified as somebody you're looking to grab, maybe with that early second round pick, maybe a little under the radar, that could emerge as the Justin Jefferson of the class, as the Brandon Ayuk, the T. Higgins is a great example, went in the middle of the second round, under the radar, and ended up looking really great.
So I think the cliche answer is Marshall. I do really like Marshall. And if I look at Marshall in a vacuum and not like allow myself to think that he's an LSU wide receiver, I'm thinking that he's too much like Justin Jefferson and a byproduct of the offense and all that stuff. I don't want to talk myself out of a player. I usually try to look at them in a vacuum and how do I like that player when I watch film. Hashtag, you know, couch potato film guy watching film highlights and stuff, you know. But anyway, I do think it's Marshall. I had a Bateman tweet about Roman that I caught some heat from my friends that like Bateman. But, you know, I'm open to Bateman. I'm not like, I want to just be clear. Like, I'm not a Bateman hater. I just don't see him being a Justin Jefferson. I don't think the ceiling's there. I don't think he's as talented as people think his profile suggests that he is. But I'm open to taking him. So I would go between like 1A, 1B, 1-2. My answer would be Marshall first. Yeah. I definitely want early second. And then secondary to that is Bateman. I think usually people take Bateman before I'm willing to take him. But
why does the dynasty fantasy community that we all swim in, even before the draft, why did they hate Kadarius Toney? And now that he has first round draft capital, does that change anything for you? And I guess, where did you stand on him to begin with?
So yeah, I was not a fan. I thought he was pretty much DeMarcus Robinson. I guess I look at these college receivers as these college programs have types. They really do have types, and the Gators are okay with these lackadaisical route runners that just get open and kind of backyard football, like just a gadget guy, you know, throw it, get open. I don't care really where you run. I don't care if you run your route properly or not. And I would say people were out on him early because there were so many film guys that we trust. I think it was Mike Renner, PFF. Yeah. He does some great coverage on draft stuff. I listened to him on a podcast and he gave a really great evaluation of him that he basically just doesn't know how to run a route. And it's hard to teach because these coaches really don't coach up like you think they do or should. In the NFL, they're not really there to teach you how to play wide receiver. It's much more a natural talent. We're here to teach you the playbook, what we want to do, and you either conform to what we do or, you know, we replace you. And I think Toney falls into that category where he's going to have to learn how to run routes for him to be successful, and he's going to have to put in that work on his own in order for him to do it.
That doesn't help bode well at all.
Well, it doesn't help that the two coaches that wanted him were, you know, were the Giants, Gettleman. Everyone makes fun of him for being a little bit of a donkey. And of course, Urban Meyer, who early on is shaping up to, you know, not have made some of the great moves, which leads me into, you know, one of our last questions here is I still have Travis Etienne as the running back one. And it's mostly because his style, the pass catching style, will seem to be more useful in the NFL. I understand why people like Najee Harris. I couldn't tell anyone you're wrong, but Travis Etienne, where do you have him? Obviously you have him behind Harris just based on our conversation here. And I see the upside as being someone like Jamaal Charles that can get it done in 15 touches. Give us your Etienne take.
So to be honest, the three running backs I have really close. I would almost like so as much to say that I would put them in the same tier and you're splitting hairs which one you take. Okay. I'm not putting a flag in the ground on any one of the three. I did like Javonte Williams the best. He's very close to being just flat out. If I had to plant a flag, bold call podcast, Javonte Williams is my RB1. For sure. I like his all around game. I like his age. I break tackles, elusive rating. I love all of that stuff when I'm evaluating running backs.
The thing that scares me about him, and tell me why, again, this is just something I did with a simple Google search, is that Michael Carter outproduced him as far as rushing yards were concerned this year. What is that all about?
Sure, that's a usage thing. I mean, that's just a usage college football. I mean, you brought up Kamara earlier. You know, we can't pretend that college teams know how to use all their players the right way. I mean, LSU moved Justin Jefferson in the slot. I mean, because they needed him to be there. I mean, these college teams will do whatever they need to do to win and to be different and creative. But so I don't hang my hat too much on that. Just basically looking at his production, I don't want to say it's lower on the totem pole for me. What I care about, I care more about, like, how did he perform when he was performing? And, I mean, that age at running back is pretty big for me.
Geek, I got a couple more from rapid fire here, but, what is a rule in fantasy football that you think every league should have? And again, I don't mean just like super flex, but like, what's something that the mainstream has not yet adopted that every time in early, you just cannot stand it? Like, for example, you know, when there's not enough taxi squad spots, I almost don't even go in the league anymore. I need a big, large taxi squad. What is something must have rules for you?
I think must have rules would be flexibility at IR. That's one big one that, as a commissioner, I've been much more flexible in, not only with COVID, even before COVID, I was much more flexible with this whole, like, I'm sure you guys come up against this. You know, when there's an in-between period where, like, a player gets on IR at the week 3 preseason, but on MFL and other sites, they'll put them as out because the NFL is playing these games with the IR and they wait to the last minute to put him on IR, but it's like foregone conclusion. We know that he's going on the IR. So, like, I usually open it up in preseason that any player can be put on the IR, and it's not sort of a trust system, but basically that, you know, we know this guy's going to go on the IR, and like, you know, it's just one of those flexibility things that I want. And also the number of IR slots, more so even than taxi squad.
How many should you have? How many IR slots?
So, like, on a 30-deep roster, I want 5 IR slots.
Yeah, I think COVID brought me around to that. I was anti-IR, but after, you know, now
COVID is unique.
Hopefully, that's what I'm saying. Now they're here to stay. Like, you know, when a couple players, you know, what's the big deal, especially in a big
so as a so as a commish, I was doing it as a 1-year trial for COVID, but going forward, I'm more inclined to keep 5 as IR spots.
How about this one? What is your take on trade veto by the commissioner? I'm in some leagues where league ruinous trades have happened.
Well, you call him league ruinous. He means lopsided donkey.
No, trades. League ruinous. It ruins the league.
Meanwhile, you paid.
So here's my
side of getting the league ruinous trade, by the way, but that never happens.
So one overarching thing about that is that if you're up against this, you have the wrong players in your league. So as a commissioner, quite frankly, you're on my shit list already. If you got me in a position where I've got to think about whether I got to veto a trade or not, you're on my shit list. Like, on both sides, like accepting that trade and offering that trade.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like a father, I guess, with kids. And I'm like, I don't want to hear you guys arguing about this. Like, I don't want it. I don't want to deal with this. That in itself is bad for the league. And I find that those don't go away. Even if you resolve that issue, you're going to have that come up again with those two owners.
We've solved the problem.
We can introduce the solution that we came up with that exists in only one league in the world.
No, that's not true. The league that I'm in with him, we started a high stakes league, a $350 entry, if that's high stakes to some, not to others, whatever. But it's a significant amount of money, right? So what we do is we have a 24-hour match the trade thing. And I'm curious so a trade goes up on the board as pending trade. All the other 10 owners can never say, oh my God, you sold Patrick Mahomes too light. Everyone gets a chance to make one blind bid to either side and beat the trade. And then the two sides. So say it's Patrick Mahomes for Austin Eckler and and, you know, Josh Allen, say that's the trade. You could offer either side and either one can accept their new trade. Do you like this rule? Some people in our league think that it's an unnecessary safety net.
I do like it.
Thank you.
I do like it. It's cool. I mean, I think I'll say this. There are different levels of things that I implement as a commish. So there's some things that I say, this is like expanding IR is an executive decision. I make that decision. That's mine to own. And if people really hate it, I'll replace you. No harm, no foul. I'm sorry you feel that way. There are some decisions where it like converting one QB to super flex, where I'm like, I don't even know. Well, actually, hold on. I'm even going stronger than that to say, I don't even know if that's good for the league, even if they vote for it. Mm. Like, that is a harder decision. You really have to think about that for a year or two. You kind of have to feel out some of the longer term owners, think about how they feel. I think that's a really hard one. But there's some in between, which the rule that you just proposed, I think is really one that you really should pull. And if you get majority vote, then you implement it. And I would almost go as far to say you probably need a majority, like a super majority.
We call it a 9 out of 12 is our super majority.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think you would need a super majority for that one. But like it, though, an idea. It's pretty cool.
We implemented it. We got it done. And the super flex thing, it took us 5 years in our other Dynasty League, but we finally got it done. And the caveat was, from time of implementation, it was going to be 2 years out. So you had 2 years to build your QBs to figure it out. So it got voted in year one, and then year one plus 2X, you know, X1, X2. So
I like it.
An interesting caveat to the trade veto concept.
Trade
match concept was, I really thought that would cause bidding wars. But the reality of it that is not what happened. Essentially what happens is it doesn't become an auction. I actually in testing it just kind of threw some easy trades out there, figuring, oh sure, I'll take this one because I'll give the league
stupidly
a chance to beat it.
Engineer, he put Pat Mahomes out there. Yeah, and he ended up selling Pat Mahomes for a first for 1.12 and Daniel Jones. And
no,
he's the one who ruined the
rounders. It was two first rounders and Daniel Jones. But the point was, you know, I'm like, hey, I'll put Mahomes on the auction block. Let's see what offers float in. But the problem is people don't look at Mahomes now. They're looking at the counteroffer that you accepted and saying, what can I do to just slightly beat that? So it didn't quite play the way I thought it might. But still, it does avoid league ruinous trades. If somebody were to, for example, want to trade, just an elite player for some garbage, you can put a block on that.
So,
and that does happen.
As a commish, I've been lucky. I've not I commish 6 dynasty leagues, and I've not had a league ruinous trade, as you call it. I've not had one like that. So I've been very fortunate.
You stop it.
But we had a guy in a league. I'll give you an example of a league ruinous trade. A dead team that had no chance to compete goes out 2 years ago and trades his next 2 first round picks for Melvin Gordon. Now, Melvin Gordon already at the time was an older running back, but more importantly, the team was so bad that it had no chance of being anything but last place. And I said, you just ruined our league. You basically gave somebody the number one overall pick for the next 2 years in a row. It's worth much more than this aging running back.
He understands what a league ruinous trade is, and that's a donkey league that we're in anyway. So I want
that's a ruinous trade.
Here's a good question ruined. To go out on, okay? Because I know what gets our guest excited here, and it's the New England Patriots. Okay,
there you go.
So that's right. I want to talk about Mac Jones, okay? And from a fantasy football perspective. One, it's a 3-parter. I'll rip off. One, did you ever believe that he was going to San Francisco, that they traded up? Did you ever believe it? Two,
no.
What is his fantasy football outlook? And I mean, are you happy with him from where the landing spot? It's got to be the best ever. So give us all the Mac Jones stuff you can, because I think he's the most interesting one because he's going at the end of that first round in Superflex rookie drafts.
I never thought he was going to San Fran. I did not know where he was going. I will say that. I thought the Patriots would take a quarterback, but I didn't think they would pay the price to move up. So, I mean, just given that, that probably was going to, I mean, if you think that through, that probably would have been Mac Jones if he was the one that fell. So I'm not that surprised that they took him. Now, in terms of Mac Jones fantasy, he's not obviously got the he doesn't have the rushing upside. I don't think he's that bad as people were poking fun at him on Twitter. And I say that now sounding like a Pat's homer, but I was saying that before. I mean, it's just like I don't, maybe I'm too like old and crusty for like this like Twitter like complaining about a dad bod, maybe because I have a dad bod or something. I don't know. Like,
the club, man.
You know, it's like, I don't know. I don't get on these guys for that so much, on these quarterbacks particularly. So what if he's Stafford, right? I mean, I'm okay with him being Stafford. I mean, you ever seen Stafford's photos of him being drunk with the red Solo cups and stuff at parties? I mean, yeah, okay, maybe he's Stafford. And that's still okay. I'm okay. I'm good with that. But
I mean, do you think that's his upside? I mean, because you know, Keek and I do comps for the site. We couldn't really come up with it. We were like Kirk Cousins, like that's where we were going, like the non-mobile. We couldn't really come up with one that we liked and we wanted.
I think it's Stafford. I think that level. I think he can be that good. The question I think is, you know, I'm concerned as a Patriots fan, was it Brady's raw talent or was it Belichick, right? The longest time we were hoping that it was Belichick. Whisper and a lot of like the sports radio guys and stuff locally here, it was all about, we want Belichick to groom that next guy, right? And I hope that's the case. I hope we see that happen in terms of a Patriots fan. I hope we see Belichick actually groom this guy, or Steve Belichick, you know, either way. But I think, you know, all jokes aside, I think so. The way to look at Mac Jones is not, is he Brady? Is he Cam Newton? I think the way to look at him is he's better than Newton, but I don't expect Tom Brady. And I'm cool with that. I mean, I'm cool with that. I mean, why would I be against that? Why would I be pissed about that? But I'm not exactly going to go buy a Mac jersey.
Well, here you go. Well, here's the question.
If you factor in team, I mean, this is the Patriots team that was able to make, you know, Garoppolo look pretty good for a little bit.
Matt Castle
had a great season, you know, and you saw when he left the team, not a very good player. So with both of those guys, so I do think system.
I would say the teams were built up around him a little bit better than they are now. I think the defense is good, but it's not as good as it was, and I think that offense in general isn't as good as it was at those times.
There's a dearth of talent on the Patriots now that is bizarre. Yes. I would question a lot of their first round picks. I don't think that's what Bill Belichick has been good at, unfortunately. And I'm a Jets fan, but you know, I'm a Tom Brady fan too. But not good in the first round. No,
Michelle and Harry not hitting is bad. Those two really hurt.
Oh, right. Brutal.
Especially when you take a first round running back and they don't hit. But that you actually, Geek just brought up something that's pretty interesting. Some pass catcher on the New England Patriots is going to have fantasy value, and you can like basically pick which one you want at any cost in these dynasty startups. Is it Nelson Aguilar? Is it one of the tight ends? Which one do you think has the best chance? Or is it going to be one of the situations where they all have like 48 catches for like 650 yards and nobody has any value?
I think that's closer to reality. If there's anybody in a tight end premium, maybe I want Jonnu
like or Hunter Henry over Henry.
I do too.
I think Jonnu's going to get the you know what it's going to be is one of them gets the touchdowns and one of them gets the receptions, and you're both like what Alan was saying. They're going to be like, one's going to be like 45,602, and the other guy's going to be like 25,358.
Yeah.
You know, it's neither is sexy.
None of that sounds very good.
No, yeah.
None of that sounds great.
Cool, but man. I mean, it all banks on Mac Jones, right? So I think if Mac Jones shows something and they transition into pretty quick, I'll be on that finger on the trigger. I mean, I'll be going to acquire them pretty good. I mean, I had Jonnu pretty heavily anyway in dynasty premium leagues, tight end premium leagues anyway, but yeah, I mean, the costs are so low on all these guys, right?
Yep.
I mean, we're not talking about...
Start getting into some startups this year. I like when you talk about your experiences in startups. That was like my favorite thing from last year. I was hearing you wake up in the middle of the night and see which players are bid on and then go plus one. And, you know, like I'm telling you, I know these are like little throwaway stories for you, but fans of your podcast like it. Let's again, if you've been sticking with us for this long for the hour, we're here with Kevin O'Brien, the fantasy football engineer. Kevin, give us, tell them where they can find you on Twitter and tell them about your podcast that is coming back soon. I'm going to make sure of it.
Okay, so on Twitter, Kevin O'Brien FF, KevinOBrien. Some people do the A, so I'm gonna tell them. Obviously,
where's
no
the A?
O'Brien.
Oh, I thought you said Kevin. I was like, K-E-V-A-N? Is that
No.
A-A-Ron.
So, E-N at the end there. Because Kevin O'Brien FF. I have a website, thefengineer.com. You can find ADP.
Say it again slow for the people, because I really think they should check it out. I like your website with all the rankings.
It's very simple. So thefengineer.com. So really been focusing on ADP lately. So I've been scraping FFPC. So I have all their API calls. I can pretty much pull any of their data. So I've been focusing on Dynasty right now, but I'll probably pull eventually some of like the Football Player Guys Championship ADP. I can pull that, the main event. I'll be pulling that too. But right now I've been pulling one QB in Superflex leagues, rookie drafts, startups, pulling all the safe league startups. So I love those because it's all the same format. You know, you can all identify all these leagues. There's like 300-400 of them, all have the same settings. Everyone's playing it the same format, et cetera. So a lot of people that pull MFL data for ADP, you're pulling leagues that are very customized. So people might have tight end premium at 1.25 or 1.75 or 2.25. You really can't, you know, it's hard to scrape those, and they're not as concentrated. So I try to look for these concentrated settings to really give people a better data set. So on my site, I've been trying to do those quite a bit.
Highly recommended. And like I said, we'll definitely, you know, hopefully we'll have you back again before the season starts, because I know one of your favorite things after you get into Dynasty is to get cold water poured on all your Dynasty rankings when the redraft rankings come out. And all those players that we took in the first five rounds are ranked like 19th at their position.
Yeah, I always keep an eye on that. And last year, I really did enjoy the best balls because it really did pour that cold water on me to really see like, oh, man, I'm really excited about this guy. But then Dynasty and even DFS on my podcast, you can go back. I've had conversations with like some of the big DFS guys like Peter Jennings and these guys. I've had interviews with those guys trying to pull in how can I leverage DFS for Dynasty and paying attention to these things and, you know, just try to leverage anything I can that's a little bit different, right?
Yep. All right. For the Geek, I'm Alan Sislowski here with the Fantasy Football Engineer. Geek, anything else to say before I cut us out?
No, man. Appreciate you coming on and all these insights. Fun. I'm getting ready to pull that trigger on Tarachi Marshall. Tarachi.
Tarachi.
I love the insights, and it's great to have you on. I like the way you're looking at a lot of these approaches to the game. And so, we appreciate having you on. And anytime you want to come back, we'd love to have you.
Anytime, guys. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.